Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome back to Beautiful from the Inside Out. This is Amanda.
And this is Frida.
And this is our second week together. So I'll tell you a little bit about myself. We'll do a quick intro for anyone that wasn't here last week. This is Amanda. I'm a certified life coach. I've been coaching for about 6 years. I attended the Coaching for Transformation program in Manhattan. And my primary focus is working with women to help them really gain self-confidence and fall in love with themselves and others, creating the best version of themselves.
And I'm Frida Corporan, and I am also a certified transformational life coach. And that's actually where I met Amanda. So we became friends through our mutual love of helping others and really wanting to help others find the best of themselves. So that's actually a great segue into our show. And so our show theme is about passion, and our passion is awakening the passion in others and helping them, you know, bring out their best selves. So with that said, Amanda, why don't you share what inspired the theme for today's topic?
Sure. So about a week ago, Labor Day weekend, I went and got a tattoo. And you're probably wondering what a tattoo has passion. But most of my life, anyone that knows me knows that I just absolutely love the Caribbean culture. It's kind of my heart, and I know that it's where I'm going to be one day. And I decided to get a tattoo on Labor Day weekend. Frida actually helped me decide what to get. And initially I was going to get Three Birds, which is a Bob Marley song, in red, yellow, and green, and my friend and I were going to get matching tattoos. We couldn't find any birds we liked, so when I was mentioning to Frida I was going to get a tattoo, she was kind of joking with me and said, oh, are you going to get a Jamaican butterfly? And I said, oh, that's a great idea. So as I sat with it, the butterfly is actually much more symbolic, and the entire tattoo is much more symbolic than you would imagine. And what it meant to me was that it's a butterfly, and it has the Jamaican flag in the middle of it. And the butterfly symbolizes the transformation and what I've completed in my life and where I'm at now. The flag, just it's going to be my home one day, and I believe wholeheartedly, without any doubt in my mind, that's where I'm going to retire. And the fact that I have it on my arm, it's on the inside of my arm, my goal is to invite people into conversation. Mm-hmm. And something that's been really important to me my whole life since I was a child was diversity and equality. And in my own gentle way, bringing people into a conversation to ask why I would have a Jamaican flag on my arm, but I'm not from Jamaica. And it just might be enough to make somebody who doesn't understand diversity curious enough to maybe just shift their mind for the moment, at least to understand me. It's not going to change everything, but if it could just invoke curiosity, in that moment they don't have judgment. And so in the bigger picture, it's just kind of changing people's hearts one step at a time.
It's so interesting because, honestly, I wasn't joking with you. I forgot about the little birds.
Mm-hmm.
So when I thought, you know, I thought butterflies, and, you know, butterflies have that symbolic meaning of transformation and, you know, the other world, the spirit world. So when I said it, it was just kind of offhanded. So when you came back and said, that's a great idea, I was so impressed with how far you took it, because you didn't just, you know, it wasn't just a tattoo. It had so much meaning for you. And, you know, knowing you as a person, as a friend, I knew that, you know, for you it's a conversation starter, and it's a way to bridge and connect yourself with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if people don't automatically say, hey, that's a great idea, you can at least start the conversation going. And, you know, whether people agree or not, at least that's just another way to help people understand.
Mm-hmm.
Understand where you're coming from, understand where the other person is coming from. So I was really impressed with the idea, because it was just, you know, it's a little idea, but it can have really impactful, you know, repercussions throughout the world, you know, which with each person that you touch, you know, with each person that you meet, with each person that you speak
mm-hmm.
with.
And I think it just in today's day and age with all the chaos that's going on right now, it's just a gentle way
yeah.
to really start a conversation. And it's not pushing my thoughts or anything on anyone, but
it's not an agenda.
Yeah, there's no agenda at all, but just to invite someone into curiosity.
Yeah.
And I think that that's my passion, really, is
yeah.
to be able to do that. And I always wondered since I was younger, like, how can I make a difference in the world? And, you know, it sounds funny that I think my tattoo is going to change the world.
I agree. I totally agree.
But it's just a small encounter. Then that's more so me. I enjoy the one-to-one, the deep conversation. You know, I might not be shouting on top of a building, but I'm making that personal impact.
And it's really brave, because you don't really know
mm-hmm.
how people are going to respond to it.
Yeah.
But you're putting it out there on your body so that it's, you can't hide it.
For the rest of my life.
For the rest of your life. You can't hide it. And it's something that it is a passion, and it's something that you have to, you know, really argue for, right?
Yeah, and I think that it's something like when you're committed to something and you want to share it with the world, and it kind of goes into really what inspired me, because I have my personal group on Facebook, and I had shared my experience and my reasoning behind the tattoo with the group. And my group is pretty interactive, and I have to say everyone is so, you know, trusting, and it's a really safe community. And before sharing my story, I invited people to share with me what they're passionate about, what do they stand for, and are they sharing it with the world? And then I shared my story that I just told you. And everyone liked my tattoo, commented on my tattoo, thought it was a great story that I had. Not one person told me what they were passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, let's just see if this is a trend. So then I posted it on my personal Facebook page. And I said, a lot of people have asked me what inspired me to get this tattoo, and I want to ask you, what are you passionate about? What do you stand for? What do you believe in? Are you telling the world? Do you really stand behind this? And I shared my story and my meaning, again, that I just gave you behind the tattoo. And with that, everyone either made comments about my tattoo, not all positive, had judgment about the tattoo,
right.
Told me they liked the tattoo, or like the meaning of the tattoo, but not one person shared what they were passionate about or what they believed in. And right after that, immediately, I just began to wonder, do people not know what they're passionate about, or are they afraid to go after it and take a stand?
Right. And sometimes people just have forgotten what they're passionate about and need to reconnect to their passion.
Absolutely.
So I think this is a great show.
So, that being said, I'm wondering what passion means to you personally.
Sure. So I'm going to start off with one of my, you know, my idol and your idol, I think, Oprah Winfrey, and her quote about passion. So she says, passion is energy. Feel the power that comes from focusing on what excites you. And for me, that is, it's not about this uncontrollable emotion in that sense. For me, it's all about kind of love, but controlled and focused with a little touch of conviction.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a little recipe, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's that little spark that lights up from within you, thing that no one can take away from you.
Mm.
And no matter what's thrown in your way, it's that purpose and determination, and again, sprinkled with some love, it makes you unstoppable. It makes you the person that is here to do business and to serve your purpose in whatever way that shows up for you in this world. And I said it with so much passion.
I know. If you can see my hands flying, I'm ducking every time my hand flies up.
And that's what, you know, passion should kind of feel like, make you feel like unstoppable. And I know that's usually what I feel when I'm, you know, when I am full of passion. And it's just, it really is having this positive attitude, which is all about inspiring, living purpose, but being really focused about it.
But what's the difference between enthusiasm and passion?
You know, it's funny because for me, I've actually had people give me books on, you know, like cults because they think I'm being kind of out there, too out there. But enthusiasm is, it's basically passion is enthusiasm with a little bit of extra, with a little extra. Enthusiasm sometimes tends to be, you know, have its little moment where it runs out. I've noticed that in my own personal life. I do get very enthused. But when I know the difference is that I don't deviate. I don't deviate from
when you're passionate.
Yeah, when I'm passionate about something.
Have you had times in your life where you may have missed out on certain opportunities that prevented you from being able to pursue your passion?
Absolutely. And I think I've mentioned to you before, you know, I used to always be a good student. And, you know, sometimes because I felt, like, comfortable in just my little group of friends, I never left that group. I always felt like no one's going to understand me, I'm going to fail if I'm outside of my group. So, you know, education-wise, I was actually up for being put into classes that were maybe more advanced. And I just kind of said, you know, I'll just stick to being safe in my little niche. I won't look outside the box, and I'll just play it safe. So, I mean, overall, the loss or what I've, you know, missed out on or prevented, what I've prevented myself from really accomplishing is connecting to others, connecting to a higher purpose in my past. And I'll share a story with you that, you know, I hope I don't laugh. This has been our joke, me and Amanda, when I feel like I'm up against a wall, I start laughing. So I hope I don't laugh. And I'll start by saying, there, I laughed.
You got it out of your
system. I got one laugh out.
I learned with Frida that, and this is something that you can probably maybe even see in yourself, is that sometimes laughter is a deflection of pain. And when things are very hard to talk about, that it takes the edge off, and it also takes away the value of the power of your word. And it can be emotional and it can be challenging to really be fully present and share that. So I want to give Frida her space to share the story that she had mentioned to me earlier that she wants to talk about, and I know that it's something that's challenging for her.
So going back to, you know, not being able to connect to others, I remember sharing a story with Amanda and our coaching group. And it was a question that was very simple. It was all about, almost like about connecting to your passion. And it was a question about when in our life were we the most happy. And I remember that I didn't think of anything right away. And my eyes were closed, And I thought, I'm just going to fail at this. I'm just not good at this. I can't think of anything. I'm just going to sit here. I'll pretend that nothing, you know, that something showed up for me that made me happy, and hopefully they won't call on me to share. And I just felt my body shake, and I was connecting to something really deep. All I remembered was being very happy with something that was really sad and scary. And that just made me burst out into tears, sobbing. And I remember that the class was sort of startled because I was always like the quiet person.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone sort of just kind of nervously looked around, and they didn't want to really call on me because they thought something really, you know, scary was happening with me. But then I think one of our coaching trainers, she said, I think she needs to share. And I remember sharing the story about when I was about 7 years old. And I remember that my mother was being choked by my and I'm trying not to laugh, was being choked by my stepfather, and they were having an argument. And before that, though, it was just, you know, raised voices and shouting. And I remember I was just kind of running back and forth, and you know how adults don't really look at children, they don't really notice them. And I was screaming and yelling and, you know, hoping that I could make it stop. And I just thought, if my stepfather hurts my mother, I'm going to be all alone in this world. I depended on my mother for everything. She was a single mother. And it was just so frightening for me. And I felt at that moment just so invisible. When I was, they didn't hear me. I had no power. I was powerless. And I thought I could disappear in this moment and no one would ever know. Like, I had no one to help me. I don't remember the events that led up to it, but I remember we fled the house, and we packed up our bags, and it was midnight, and it was summertime. I was wearing my little shorts, and I remember that we got on the bus, and the bus was ice cold. You know, it was like the AC was blasting, and my mom pulled out a blanket from this little, you know, this little knapsack, whatever, this little bag, and I felt so happy. You know, it was like so complete in this really frightening experience, in this like horrifying moment. I was just with being with my mom, but running away. And I remember when I shared this story, it moves so many people, and you just never know what you're missing out by not sharing with other people, by not being vulnerable, because from that, a lot of people got to know me, but they also could share an experience that has happened in their own life that's similar,
mm-hmm.
because there are so many things that are stopping us. That get in the way of our passion because it comes from our childhood, because we don't see these patterns, because we don't see these underlying things that we've hidden away, these memories. So for me, you know, fear of vulnerability really got in the way of passion. So sharing that story was one of the ways that I was able to really help get in touch with passion. Because for me, passion is about connecting to others. And it's about really realizing that there isn't a boundary or a barrier between you and other people, you need to be more vulnerable. You need to share. You need to have this awareness of those little things that stop you and get in the way. So, that I realized in that moment from our class is really, you know, and I recommend that to everyone, for our listeners. You know, if there's something getting in the way of your passion, take a look. Take a look back at your memories, your childhood, things that there could be patterns. There could be patterns in your life that you just need to uncover. So,
I wanted to thank you for sharing that, because I know that that was a really challenging story to be able to talk about, and it's one of your more difficult memories and times in life that, you know, talking about it openly, and again, each time that you talk about it, it's another layer that's peeled off, and now it's not a classroom of 30 people, now it's, you know, potentially hundreds of people, mm-hmm. and being able to impact others by sharing the story. So,
thank you for pushing me, you know, as coaches do, to take that little step to further your growth. Your growth as a person is just, you know, visiting those places that are hard to take a look at. But when you take a look behind the door, there's so much there. I mean, it's scary, but there's so much to uncover.
What I think is probably interesting and helpful for the listeners is we had a brief recap before the call just to make sure that we had a good amount of information to provide for the listeners. And on this question, initially, Frida had some different answers but wanted to share something really personal so that she can impact the listeners. And just by, and again, what Frida mentioned, by invoking that coaching type relationship, that even though we're friends, when we're stuck, we have that ability to coach each other and push through different things, that it gave her the courage to be able to share this story and how it would impact others.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And with that, we were able to also talk about some patterns. So what are some other times in your life that you can tie in when maybe you ran away, and what was the outcome of that?
So it was interesting when we were having the discussion, our recap, we were talking about patterns, and for me, a big pattern in my life has been running away. And a lot of insight to that pattern or mode of behavior came from the coaching class and came from these, you know, little exercises in self-awareness. So that memory, while difficult, really explains a lot about my behavior. And so for me, you know, I've realized that, you know, in relationships, in friendships, whenever there was someone said something that I didn't like, it was like, I'll write you off, you know, and there I am laughing, but I'll write you off and, you know, this is what I do. This is what works. I run away and the problem is solved. But you know, another thing that I was running away from was really my relationship with my father.
Mm.
I had known that my father. I think I met my father when I was about 7 years old, and I think he looked in my ears to make sure that I was clean. Okay, this is a 7-year old's memory, and even then, I thought that was a really, because he wasn't the one taking care of me. But, you know, I had avoided meeting him. I think when I was 23, I started looking for my siblings. and he was on that checklist of people that I needed to meet. And that was, I was determined to do it, and at 23, I went on the search and looked for him. And, you know, by meeting him, by getting a chance to see him, I was avoiding or I was learning that in the avoidance, I was not facing reality. You know, I was fantasizing about a person that didn't exist. I was making up stories about, you know, this great dad and, you know, this person that when I finally met him, he would solve all these problems and answer all these questions for me.
That also becomes an outlet of an excuse.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so, you know, that's something that I learned too. It's like you have to, and that's another part of passion is facing fear, being courageous, taking those steps that are difficult, but then at the end, no matter what you find, whether it's positive or negative, it's going to clear things up for you.
So you're unattached to the outcome.
Exactly, exactly. And so, Amanda, you know, in your life, you know, what can you say that you've gained, or what insights have you had from your from similar type of situations?
I had a situation when I was younger, and, you know, I've had a couple of situations where fear got in the way, and I missed out on opportunities. And, you know, I used to be petrified of planes, and this was since I was a kid. It was so odd to me because I would look at a plane that was flying in the air, and I'm a Y person.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing you can tell me to explain why this thing was floating up in the sky. You can try to explain gravity. You could have explained anything. But in my mind, it's just doomed to crash. Mm-hmm. That was my thought process
right. When
I was younger. And petrified for years. So I missed out on, you know, anything that was really out of driving distance. I mean, I would have driven 24 hours in a car before I would have gotten on a plane for a 3-hour flight.
Wow.
And, you know, I missed out on vacations while everyone was going away and doing all kinds of different exciting things. So I feel like I missed out on a lot. And in the younger years when people were visiting places and kind of having fun in your 20s, I didn't go anywhere. So that was something that, even though I had such a curiosity about the rest of the world, because of my fear of flying, I didn't pursue that. I also believe that because of working, a combination of, by working in corporate and having that business mind where the woman has to take care of everything and having that ultra independent attitude for years, and also growing up independent. I lived on my own since I was 17.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that got in my way, and I had that attitude of I don't need anyone, I can do it myself. And I,
while you did have that feeling, did you ever feel like there was something missing?
I didn't know then what it was.
Mm.
I just knew I had to be self-sufficient, and I didn't know that I was in actuality protecting myself.
Mm.
I learned that in the later years while we were going into coaching and personal development, and what I was really doing was avoiding love, avoiding being hurt. And even furthermore, in studying relationships, the balance of masculine and feminine energy, by having that ultra masculine personality where I had to do everything myself and I didn't have to lean on anyone for help or ask for help and have that ego, that doesn't work in a relationship because men want to be masculine, and when an ultra masculine woman comes along, they don't have a place anymore. They don't feel needed. And men want to be the leader. They want to be the caretaker, and they want the woman to be a little bit softer and nurturing and need them once in a while.
So there's no place for them.
Right.
When you come in with that very masculine attitude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was a roadblock for me. And another thing that I experienced was when I was younger, as long as I can remember, I was always so good with children. I mean, I was family babysitter. I was a friend's babysitter. Children of every age just would flock to me. I don't know if it's because I have a soft speaking voice. I don't know what it is, but children just energetically run to me. They don't even have to know me.
Smell like cupcakes.
Yes, I wear cupcake perfume. I remember a situation when I was 16, and I had taken one of those neighborhood programs to become certified as a babysitter. And they place you with local families in the neighborhood. And my first experience after being certified, I was placed with this family. It was a little boy, a little girl. The boy was about 7, and I think the girl was 5. The parents worked nights and needed a sitter. So initially, it started out pretty simple. You know, they left me frozen dinners to microwave. I mean, I didn't have to be a gourmet cook.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did the basics, and then I went into their room, and it was a disaster. I managed to convince a 5- and 7-year-old to clean their room. I made up this game, and I said to them, okay, you each have to tell me something you lost in your room. I'm going to write it down on a piece of paper. And you have to go into this room and find it. And whoever finds it first wins. But the trick is that everything that you pass along the way, you have to put away. And if I catch you walk past something and don't put it away, the other person wins.
Wow, that's really clever.
Yeah. And the prize was you got to stay up 30 minutes later. So at 5 or 7, 30 minutes was like a lifetime. I didn't spend any money on this gift. Like, this is 30 minutes that we got to stay up past their bedtime if they found what they were missing. Meanwhile, they cleaned their room. So they both went through the whole room. Neither found what they were looking for. And I said, you both did a great job. They got to stay up 30 minutes later. This is the first night that I was there. So the little girl goes to sleep earlier anyway because she's 5. And the little boy is wrapping up his homework. And he says, you know, I like you so much better than the other babysitter. And I said, why? He said, well, you know, she never talked to us, and she wouldn't really cook the food, and she just wasn't nice.
Hmm.
I was like, oh, all right, you know. And then it came time for him to go to sleep. And he asked me to read him a bedtime story. And he said, I didn't like when the other babysitter put me to sleep. I said, why? He said, she would make me hold up my book, and she would touch me.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't know what to do. I was 16.
Mm.
I was not trained
in
this. And he started to cry. And I asked him, I said, did you ever tell anyone this? No. You're the only person I told. In one day, I just paid him that little bit of attention, and he felt safe enough to know that it was okay to tell me this. And I thought about whatever I saw on TV, and I said, you did the right thing. I'm glad that you told me. You didn't do anything wrong. And he was okay, and I sat with him for a little while, and he fell asleep. So, of course, I had to tell the parents. And it was very traumatizing for them because it was a friend of the family's daughter.
Oh, my goodness.
And I knew that from that point, this was more than just kids liking me.
Mm.
There was something about the level of comfort that he had, that he could trust me to share such a difficult story the very first time that he met me.
And how did you feel about what had happened?
I was upset. I was, you know, I never knew of anything like that at that age happening to anyone. And but I also felt that there was something bigger that I was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
That Sunday, or maybe the following Sunday, I remember getting out the Help Wanted section. And if you remember the movie Desperately Seeking Susan,
exactly.
she has the red marker, and she's circling the question, the job application, the classified section, with the red marker. And so that's what I did, and I looked in the paper for a child psychologist job at 16 and went through the 10-day paper and circled every single one. I had no idea how I was going to get to work. I obviously hadn't gone to college yet, but I thought because of this experience that I was qualified to assist children in their problems because they felt comfortable with me.
Yeah.
The intention was there. And I followed through, and that Monday I had enough sense to wait till Monday. After school, high school, 10th grade, I went home that afternoon and started calling for job interviews as a child psychologist. So you couldn't have told me no.
No.
And they laughed at me. They said, "I'm sorry, how old are you?" 16. Because, you know, when you're a teenager,
you
have that unstoppable attitude.
You know everything. Mm-hmm.
And no one called me in for an interview. But I thought that was my life purpose. And once I actually finished high school, how many years I was going to have to go to college. And at the time, I was living on my own at 17. My mom was not in a situation to fully take care of herself because she was diagnosed as being bipolar when I was 5. And I was technically her caretaker. And I had to sacrifice a lot when I was younger because I had to make sure she was in the hospital and, you know, was she sick? And it kind of almost, even though I wasn't living with her because it was too difficult to live with, I had to constantly check in and make sure she was okay. And my father wasn't around at all. He, we never got along. We didn't speak anything. So to support myself at 17 without a college degree, I was working two jobs, and I had this whole story that, you know, child psychology, just it's too much work. I can't do it. I just had to give up that wasn't going to happen.
Right.
And I just did whatever I could to survive at that point. And I managed keeping a roof over my head, and I had my little hard-knock life and learned some lessons and did things wrong and kind of messed up quite a few times. But I, every once in a while it would come to me and I would wonder, like, what would have happened if somehow I went to college? You know, I mean, there's people that do it all the time. I just didn't even know where to begin. All I could think of was getting out of my house, not looking back, and making sure that I'd never had to go back again, that I could just have a roof over my head.
You were surviving.
Yeah. And I didn't have that room or that opportunity for space to think about it and really explore what was possible or how to pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was definitely a very hard time in my life.
So have you had the opportunity to revisit any of those fears?
Well, I have. I want to explain it to you. I just want to check in real quick because we're about halfway through the show. So I just want to mention if there's any callers out there, if you'd like to call in and we can help you maybe even identify what's holding you back, feel free to give us a call. The call-in number is 646-716-9397. So again, the number is 646-716-9397. And just going back to your question, I have had the opportunity to revisit those fears. When I started flying, the funny thing is I didn't fly until after 9/11. So I was in my 30s on my first flight, and it was almost immediately after 9/11. It was like within a couple of months. And
how did you feel about that?
You know, for that, even though the terrorist attacks were horrifying, I mean, Frina and I both live here in New York, so it has to hit home. That wasn't my fear on the plane. I wanted to believe and trust in the security of the airport and the professionals that we would be okay. I had to have belief in the actual plane itself. And I don't know what shifted. I know that my best friend was living out of state at the time, and I really think that that's what made me push through, because that was my first flight, and the weather was awful that night. There was turbulence. I mean, I was only going from New York to Maryland, and what is that, an hour and a half flight? The whole ride there, I was hyperventilating practically, but I did it. And then once I did it, I was like, this is what I've been waiting for, and the travel bug was in my system, and once a month I was down to visit her. I was flying to Jamaica. I was flying to Florida. You couldn't hold me in one spot. So once I kind of stopped listening to the fear and the story in my mind, I shut that off. The other thing that I would say that I linked back on was as far as psychology. While I didn't pursue child psychology at this point in my life, I think that I'm glad that I didn't, because mentally, if I was, I know they give you tools, but I don't know if I was mentally strong enough to hear some of the stories that children go through day in and day out. It's different than listening to an adult, because a child has no say in the matter and no choice. And I don't know if I could have handled that. I believe that I still have the ability to make connections and impact and help children, but taking the change and going full circle and becoming a coach, I think is equally as beneficial for me. And because of my life lessons, I have so many things that I can share and give and help my clients with that I've studied the positive psychology and neuro-linguistic programming and transformational coaching. So many of the tools that I would have studied in college, I've learned through various courses. And in the way that I'm applying it now, I feel completely fulfilled and happy with going about it in this aspect.
And I think there's a lot to be said about experience.
Because there's
book smart and then there's street smart.
Yes.
And you've got both.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the experiences that you can draw from, and you've got also all these different techniques and different tools in your toolbox that you can share with your clients.
Absolutely.
And Amanda, I know we had talked earlier about pain versus pleasure point.
Yeah.
Can you share a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So I think something that really holds me accountable and keeps me focused is identifying in various situations what my pleasure point is and what my pain point is. So a great example of that, and then I'll explain it to you, is when I moved. I used to live in Westchester County, which, if you don't know the area, it's not a whole lot to do up there, a whole lot of trees, and it's just
a lot of wilderness.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's great for the peace of what it offers, but I needed, I was landlocked, and I needed to be on the water. And when I was looking to move, and I came across my apartment where I'm at now, I knew within seconds from the picture when I had seen it online that it was the same picture that of the place that I wanted to live for 15 years. And I saw an opening. I went there, and this is another thing is following the determination, was I went there at 7:30 at night. It took me 2 hours to get there and signed the lease that night. The landlord thought I was out of my mind.
Hmm.
And she said, "Don't you want to see the ocean? Because I live on an oceanfront property." And I said, "I know what the ocean looks like. I want the apartment before someone takes it." And I took it that night because I was so certain
mm-hmm.
of what I wanted that you could not have deterred me
yeah.
if you wanted to. But when I moved here, I also set myself up in a situation where it's, I don't want to say impossible because anything is possible, but it's extremely inconvenient to commute from here. I live in Rockaway Beach, and you need to take a bridge to get here, and it's basically an island. So one side of the island is the bay, the other side is the ocean. It's a beautiful place in the summer. It's like a little mini vacation here, and the best choice I've ever made. But to keep myself motivated, focused with work, I knew that I could never commute again if I wanted to live here. I can't handle the traffic. My pain point is sitting in traffic in New York City. get out of Rockaway Beach, just to get to the mainland, is a good 20 minutes. And that's just a regular day. Now I got to get to a job. So after I get those 20 minutes out of the way, you're looking at least an hour to get to any location, if not more. This commute could easily be an hour and a half to 2 hours each way, which would be somewhere between 3 and 4 hours a day. Like, can you hear the pain in my voice?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't foresee losing 3 to 4 hours a day of my valuable time when I could be doing so many other things. So my pain point is I don't want to commute. It makes me sick to my stomach. It's just wear and tear on my car. It hurts my body. It's aggravating. It's tiring. I lose energy. I hate commuting. My pleasure point is that my office, when I keep my window open, overlooks the ocean, and it's absolutely beautiful. And at any moment, working from home, I could take my break and walk across the street to the beach. Also, setting up a virtual business, I can travel. I can visit friends and family that I haven't had the opportunity to see because of being in an overworked corporate job working 60 or 70 hours a week, that I can go away for a week and work while I'm away. I don't have to, I can still keep working. I don't have to, you know, everything doesn't have to be a vacation.
Right.
I can live anywhere. And even though that sounds like that's a big deal, that pain point I have made so visual and so internal, and so I can feel it in my body when I think about commuting, that my pain point is actually bigger than my pleasure point. So when you need to go after a goal and you want to stay focused, your pain point has to be so deep and descriptive that you can feel it turning in your stomach. And that's how you keep yourself committed. If you can't build on that pain point to make it absolutely horrendous, then it's not going to happen, because the pleasure doesn't drive you. The pain is what drives you.
Mm. That's such an interesting technique. It's like so simple, but it's so visceral, right? It's like you feel it in your body. It's
yeah.
Like, it's so motivating.
There's days that if I wake up and I'm feeling lazy or I don't want to do anything, I flash back to that horror show that I had where I was working. I used to go home crying every day and stressed and just shaking and overworked and exhausted and isolated. And I think about that and I can't ever go back to that again. And that's what gets me going. It's not because I want to keep my oceanfront property. It's because I can't imagine my life otherwise working in a corporate job again.
Mm-hmm. That's so powerful. Because as you say it, I'm almost like living through you.
Yeah.
Like living through that experience. So this is a great technique for any of our listeners out there. So think about your pleasure point and your pain point, and see how that can help you get closer to your passion.
Absolutely, and build on it. It can't just be, if you made a simple statement of saying, I want to live on the ocean and I don't want to commute, if I summed up everything that I said before and gave you those two sentences, it doesn't impact you.
Mm.
You're like, oh, that's nice. But when I tell you how horrific it feels when you sit in traffic and you have people beeping their horns and yelling at you because you didn't move across a green light in a half a second and you waited 3 seconds, and people are just, you know, cutting you off, and, you know, you have to make sure you don't hit anyone, and pedestrians are running across the street, and if you don't live in New York City, you don't understand.
People are like, what?
If you are so guarded when you're holding the wheel that you're on call the entire ride waiting for someone, oh, and the bicycles. I'm sorry, I just have to say, the bicycles.
You went back to your pain point, Amanda.
I had to make sure it was clear. The bicycles. Yeah, I get it. It's a great way of living. You're healthy. You want to save on the economy. But I'm always afraid I'm going to hit them. I stress out because they ride right next to you. And then sometimes they even ride in a lane. And they take up the entire lane. I'm sorry. Shout out to the bicycle riders, but
you're not there. You're not.
I know.
There.
I'm coming back. I'm good. I'm right. I had a little moment. Sorry about that. But Yeah, so as you can see, the pain point. And that is what I need to be clear on, is that the pain point must be so big that that we have to really make sure that it's emphasized and strong and clear.
Inner critics. Amanda and I were talking about inner critics, and that's, you know, one of the blocks to passion. And for me, you know, one of the ways that I identify this inner critic is I treat it as, you know, a person or an entity or something that's always been with me. And, you know, one of the things that I learned in coaching was that the inner critic originally was set up by you to serve a purpose. And, I mean, you're probably wondering, what purpose is it serving? Well, that's right. It's not serving a purpose for you now. But maybe down the road or in your past, this inner critic was there to somehow save you. And I'll give you an example. So one of the common fears that people have is public speaking. And, you know, I think they fear that, I think that's the number one fear above death, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, that inner critic will say, well, you don't know what you're talking about. You're dumb. You're stupid. You're going to look like a fool. So one of the things that I do is I really sit back and I try to ask this inner critic that it's trying to serve. So if it's calling you dumb or if it's calling you silly, or the purpose that it's trying to serve is that it doesn't want you to look foolish.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you really work with that voice of doubt? So what I usually do is I try to realize that it's not about the result. So whatever it is that I'm trying to take up, whether it's public speaking, whether it's just us doing our show here today, whether it's, you know, taking a chance and being a little bit more vulnerable and being authentic and sharing your voice, even though you think you're going to look like a fool. And this could, you know, and our listeners, you know, if you're out there and you want to take a risk on love, but you don't want to look, you think you might look foolish, you know, talk to your inner critic and really find out what it is that you want to accomplish. You know, it's not about the results. We don't take chances because we just don't think the end result is going to happen for us. But it's more about the process, you know,
mm-hmm.
taking that chance, taking that step. You never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to be on the other side. And just like the stories that I shared and Amanda shared, you know, Amanda, if she hadn't taken that step, she wouldn't be, you know, traveling all over the world and being a, you know, cultural, you know, cosmopolitan diva. If we had, you know, let our inner critic talk to us about the show, we wouldn't be doing this show right now.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't be sharing and impacting, hopefully, the lives of people out there as well.
Yeah, and our intention of sharing the stories is not really to just talk about ourselves, but by sharing it, seeing how life hits someone on the outside and how they work through it, it's a really great example of how you can learn to shift the life yourself. So it's really a way of leading by example and allowing ourselves to be vulnerable so that we can open up and share with you and give you the same opportunities.
Do you have time to share the Tyrese story? I think that's a perfect way to end it.
Yeah, I think we can get that in there. So I had an opportunity that was really amazing about a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. And one of my favorite artists is Tyrese Gibson. He is a singer. He was in Fast and the Furious. And it's not so much that I enjoy following him for his professional achievements, while I acknowledge them. It's how he carries himself. And he is constantly doing videos on Facebook and sharing his personal life, especially after Paul Walker passed away, how things have impacted him and he had a spiritual journey. And I love listening to him. And he has decided to leave his record label and go on an independent label where he's promoting it himself. And he would share videos where he was in, like, the New York City subway, and he was singing on the subway and trying to get people to buy his album. Or he would go into Target, and he would interview the sales clerks and make sure they had enough copies of his album on the shelves, and all these different things that you would never see someone that is an established performer do. So then he ran a contest. And his contest was, if you bought 10 or more albums, that he was going to call and talk to you personally. Without a doubt, I needed to do this. And Frida and I happened to be away that weekend when I heard about it. And I said, oh, I got to do that. And I was like, I don't think I'm going to do it. I mean, come on. How many people, with all the fans he has, all these people are going to want to buy the album. How is he going to find time to call all these people? He's not going to really call. It's not going to happen. And I didn't buy the album. And that was Saturday past, Sunday past, Monday past. Tuesday, I was signed on to Facebook, and he was on that new platform, Facebook Mentions, where you're live. Okay, you know, he's going to be going live in X amount of time, and he's going to start calling his people. It's going to be recorded live on Facebook while he calls all the people that bought his album. I'm like, he's really doing this. This is really happening. What am I crazy? I'm not going to take advantage of this opportunity and speak to him. Like, when else would I ever get a chance to talk to him? And I don't run around just wanting to talk to celebrities, but he impacts me in such a way because of how vulnerable he is, that that's something I want to continue to grow with, and I wanted to talk with him. So I said, I'm going to buy the albums. So I did, and I bought the 10 albums. I was online when he went live on Facebook, one of the very first people on there waiting to get the phone call. I sent my email in with my Skype ID, and I began my journey of waiting. And this took place over a course of 6 hours that I waited to talk to him. And during those 6 hours, the range of emotions that I had, first of all, I'm going to Skype with Tyrese Gibson. Right. Let's just really talk about that. Like, I got to have my hair done. Like, I have to look, like, decent.
Presentable.
Yeah. Now, we're going into the late hours of night. It's midnight. I need to make sure that I actually look like I'm awake, so I'm drinking coffee and tea and redoing my makeup and lipstick, and then I'm giving up, and I'm saying, you know what, it's been 4 hours, he's not going to call, and then I would want to give up, and then I would say, stop it, you can't give up, this is your only opportunity, you're in this to the end, and the up and down of emotions of yes, you can, no, you can't, yes, you can, no, you can't, it's going to happen, what were you going to say, are you going to sound stupid, are you going to freeze,
you're both a critic,
yeah, mm-hmm. There's mm-hmm. my critic. Are you going to know what to say? Are you going to sound silly? Are you going to not have anything of value to say to him? Well, I had 6 hours to prepare. So really, at this point, I had no excuse, because it's not like I randomly ran into him in the street. I had 6 hours to prepare for this. So my inner critic really made no sense whatsoever, but I was still listening to it. I stuck it through. 1 o'clock in the morning came, he was done, he was exhausted, he made about 100 phone calls, and said, I'm wrapping up for the night, I'm sorry I didn't reach everyone, he's done. I said, oh my God, I knew it wasn't going to happen, and I was giving up again. I said, don't give up yet, you have to stick with this. I sent one last email, and in the interim while I was waiting, I had five more albums, so now I have 15 albums. This is now my third email, because when I had sent the second one, when I bought the second set of albums. So I sent my 30-bell email saying, I've been online for 6 hours. I waited patiently. Is there any way possible that I can please speak to him? My email address is Empower Life Coach. That's the name of my website. They emailed me back in about 2 seconds, and they said, we're calling you right now. When the assistant got live with me, he said, I saw your screen name. I know why you wanted to speak to him.
Wow.
And within 2 minutes, he was live, and he was talking to me. We talked for about 5 minutes, and he was the nicest. It was everything that I would have imagined, and I recorded it. The last minute or so cut off, but he was so real, and he told me it's about taking chances. I asked him, I said, how do you allow yourself to be so vulnerable? That was my question to him.
Mm-hmm.
And still keep that level of professionalism, but be able to share with people so openly and so transparent. And he said, it's just about just being real with people and taking chances and taking advantage of those opportunities. And he admitted that talking to all those people throughout the day, that he was scared. Tyrese was scared. And I just thought he was Superman, that he doesn't get scared. So when I realized he was scared too, I'm like, wow, we're two scared people talking on the phone right now. And people were telling me how shocked they were of how calm I was talking to him and that it was like nothing. Well, that's because I sat there for 6 hours preparing what I was going to say. But, you know, when I kept myself in check and said he's a real person just like everyone else. He has a lot of value to give, but he's still just a real person. And that's kind of what kept me grounded, is checking in with myself. But the inner critic was all over the place for those 6 hours. And I had to keep shutting it down and bringing myself back and shutting it down and bringing myself back. And I had to share that series of events on my Facebook page with people because they said I made it look so easy. I said, oh, no, no, no. You need to know what happened during those 6 hours because it was not easy. But because I stuck through it, I had that huge win of talking to him and I didn't give up. And so when your inner critic kicks in and that self-sabotage, most of the time, that's when people give up and run away. But when you stay with it, the prize is on the other side. You have to stay with it. And you have to know that it's just an inner critic. It's not real. And push through it. Whatever it is, you push through it and you keep going. And even if you, like, that day for 6 hours, it hit me hard at least 50 times probably in 6 hours. But all 50 times I was ready with my rebuttal and I kept going.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to do. You just have to keep going.
And that story is great on so many levels because, one, the inner critic, you know, it's like pushing through, it's almost like the bigger that critic is, and the harder you push against it, the more value you're going to receive at the end of it, right?
Absolutely.
It's like your reward was so great because of that fear level, right?
Absolutely.
And I thought that was great what you said about, you know, the fear, because I heard this great little story. A teacher that I had said that his child went up to another child and said, I'm afraid of you too. Let's play. And I think that's what people need to realize is, you know, we're all connected and we have all the same, maybe different stories, but we have the same fears and the same challenges. And, you know, if you connect to people on that level of just, you know, being authentic, being real, and really caring about the process and not the result, I mean, it's going to take you places where you're going to be so rewarded at the end of it.
I agree. And that ties into our next episode where we're going to talk briefly about what happens when you don't know what your passion is.
Mm.
And we're going to explore that briefly in our next episode on October 6th and bring you through into a visualization of your future so that you can walk through it, and it's going to be a very soft and tranquil, almost a meditation and a visualization that will impact you so that you can clearly see where your future is going and what you need to do to get there. So you want to make sure that October 6th that you are there at 8 p.m., and that's a Tuesday, and we'll be taking callers at the end of that show as well.
So we just want to let you know that the next show will be taking place September 16th at 1 p.m., and it's called Walk Your Talk with Leanne and April, the Donaldson Institute Let's Adopt Reform show. So we just wanted to make sure to share the next show.
Yeah, so it's been great having you tune in, and we look forward to talking to you in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Good night.